He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and for those who are listening, I am doing it alone this week, as my co-host, Jay DeMarkin, is still in Europe, hopefully investigating car situations over there for our listeners in the future. However, there are a couple things I want to just sort of editorialize about as we move into 2022, early springtime when this show is done. And it has a lot to do with various opinions that I am now beginning to take out in the street about what we have available as cars and trucks, I guess, because they're partly cars, and what people want, because there is a disconnect, well, disconnect maybe is not the right word, between what some people who know something about what they like in cars don't want as much as there is about what they do want. And one of the things that I'm finding about older people, of which I am one, is that they do not want a lot of the technology that is available in the, certainly all the upper-level trims of new vehicles, that is 2022 and forward, as well as some of the past 2021s, that the vehicles come equipped with if they aren't able to find a vehicle without this equipment. I'm talking partly about the smart cruise control situation, systems that have been out for many years in some European luxury cars, although enhanced with the full stop restart capability without your applying the brakes yourself. But smart cruise control, some of the people are complaining about their new cars that they've purchased with those equipment, and they say the car is beeping at them all the time. And you are right in some ways, or they are right in some ways, in that these cars that come fully equipped with blind spot monitoring, backup pedestrian protection, which both the blind spot monitoring and these two are, in my opinion, should be required at all trim levels of all vehicles already being produced. And the backup camera and monitoring and blind spot monitoring, I think, are maybe already almost required on all new cars. But some of these other things that are out there are crazy. And they have cars that are equipped with cameras that can look 360 degrees around the car. But you have smart cruise control, which for people who are knowledgeable about these smart cruise controls, our cruise controls that basically automatically set the distance of your car going no matter what you set the cruise control speed at as you approach cars in front of you when you're cruising at a faster pace that they might be. There's a big safety situation here, for sure. But for those who are lazy, and I don't consider myself one, as a lazy driver situation, the only issue that you must remember is if you've got a smart cruise control system and you're in the right lane of an interstate four-lane or six-lane highway and you were set at 72 or something like that miles an hour, and then you just start using it as your main throttle, you will find yourself often going sometimes well below the cruise control speed you set, and you don't know it because it's automatically slowing you down if you're approaching a car in front of you, but you haven't gone out to pass it. That's not an unsafe situation, quite frankly. It is a very safe situation, but it can be annoying for those people who think that they're making progress on a trip, and they forget that they're using a smart cruise control system, and they can find themselves going, let's say, instead of 72 miles an hour, 65 or even 60 miles an hour, for miles before they realize that it's not them, they're not going the speed they thought they were because they're not paying attention to their speedometer. I won't say that's an unsafe situation. It probably is pretty good, but it can leave people wondering why their car isn't going as fast as they thought, and that's because of the smart cruise control systems. I have purchased a couple of cars recently, and I have intentionally not purchase any cars with this particular feature on it. The blind spot monitoring and the rear camera backup allows you to see people behind you are two obviously very important safety systems, but some of these cars are beeping for other reasons, and people don't know what to do. The stop-start system in cars people don't seem to like, but I don't think that that's a criticism that they should be really worrying about, because you can actually save probably incrementally a significant amount of gas if you apply it and keep it running when you're stopped at a stop sign or a stoplight, because turning off the engine cuts the use of gas. And as we are faced with quite high gas prices, and I'll continue in that vein right now, it's interesting to know that I am observing that people in pickup trucks and vehicles that probably consume gas at a very uneconomical rate, and that is actually, I should say, well below 20 miles per gallon or 25 miles per gallon, as SUVs, pickup trucks, and heavy-duty, well, heavier vehicles are prone to do. The cost to fill your tank today is skyrocketed in the last 3 months, and people are starting to pay attention to that. The gas price situation, Connecticut, as most listeners know, forced all major suppliers to drop their gas prices from at some level at which they were existing before April 1st came along by 25 cents a gallon. I have not seen that that has actually occurred across the board, but it's now become very hard because gas prices are creeping up again, and there is no way you know whether the station at which you are seeing the gas prices increase are actually having to increase them at the rate they seem to be doing, because the cost of the gas at wholesale has been going up at the same level that you see the price going up at the gas pumps. I am very dubious that that is happening in many places. On my trips from Fairfield County, Connecticut, where gas prices are probably the highest in the state of Connecticut in most places, and I'm talking about as high as $4.94 a gallon for regular, all the way up to the northwest Connecticut corner, where it's now at $4.29 and maybe above at our local area stations per gallon. So this is for regular grade only. So if you're using premium, you're paying more. It cost me this morning at big chain discount place $44 to put 10.7 gallons of fuel in. Actually, cost me more than that, $48 to put 10-plus gallons of fuel in my vehicle at a place where the gas price was $4.07.9 a gallon. Everybody that's listening, we're going to be paying high gas prices for some time. They keep projecting that maybe the gas prices will go down, but we have summer driving coming up. We have all sorts of things pressuring the gas prices to stay high. Diesel is outrageous in Massachusetts. It's over $6 a gallon for diesel fuel in some places. I'm glad Jay is not here to listen to it, because he's a big diesel proponent. And there's no way that at $6.29, $6.49 range prices for diesel that I've seen in Massachusetts, it's in the high fours, if not fives, in Connecticut, which is surprising that it's so much lower than Massachusetts. It's extraordinary how much it costs to fill a diesel-propelled vehicle these days, especially pickup trucks, which have 35-gallon gas tanks or fuel tanks capacities in many of them. And you do the math, just even it out at $6 a gallon for 30 gallons, that's $180 a fill-up. And those pickup trucks, diesels in general, don't get a whole lot better than 20 miles a gallon per tank full, in many cases, probably 18 to 20, maybe 17 to 20, and if loaded less, which makes it extraordinarily expensive. And you can only imagine what the tractor-trailer rigs that hold 100 gallons in saddle tanks, it costs to fill them up. here's what's going on in the used car market. Oh, back to the people who don't want all the technology. They are opting to buy older, in many cases, older used vehicles that don't have all this high-grade technology in them because they don't, if they know what they're doing, that is, and can find the vehicle of their choice, because they don't want some of this new fangled stuff that's coming in the under the guise of safety for everybody, but costing them, making the vehicles cost more. They're looking for vehicles that don't have, that aren't equipped with some of the stuff that many of these vehicles are equipped with. And I know people who have claimed, and I'm one of them actually, who say they've bought their last car for some time because they don't want to have to go and buy one of these newer vehicles with all the technology. And the problem with all the technology is, while it's great in theory and in practical operational characteristics, if you get in an accident, you've got a much higher insurance bill coverage situation because all this technology has sensors installed in the vehicles to make the technology work, and they all have to be realigned and reset and reprogrammed if you get in a front or rear end collision where many of the sensors are located. And you won't know this when you're, many people won't know this when they're looking at cars because the salespeople aren't going to tell you this, but that is the fact of life in car purchases. As we go into the electric era, people who listen to this show have heard my ranting about the fact that there's probably going to be a problem with charging stations numerically in some places in this country as more and more electric cars are on the roads and especially in cross-country type of driving.
Can I just interject for 1 second on that? I was talking to someone the other day, just a regular person, who, you know, doesn't have a life that would at all support having to stop for 25 minutes to get enough charge to go someplace. And I just think that this is the craziest, my personal opinion here, there is an assumption that it is weird.
Well, I'm going to take Jay's side of this. Jay argues with me about this. Most people aren't going to drive on a daily basis enough to worry about charge anxiety or charging anxiety. The biggest issue is if you buy an electric car, you have to probably install an electric charger at your house.
Yeah, but I'm wondering what demographic you're talking about, though. If you're talking about an older person, yeah, of which you, as you said, are one. But if you're talking about day-to-day stuff, like where you got to get the dog to the vet and then the kid's at school and then the kid gets sick and you got to pick up the kid and then you got to go to the grocery store and then you got to go run back to get the dog that was at the vet, demographic every day.
Using those locations, you're not going to find a charging station everywhere and you're not going to stop everywhere to be able to do what you said earlier in this comment, which was most people aren't going to want to spend 25 minutes at a minimum to get a charge between stops.
The school nurse calls and you got to go get your kid and your car doesn't have enough to go back and forth.
Well, this is the problem of it's like having enough fuel in your gas tank too, except it's a lot easier to take care of if you running short.
I'm just saying, but that's why I used the time example.
Exactly, but you're going to have to learn how to deal with electric car ownership, which is one. When you finish at the daytime, at the end of the day, you have to plug it in without fail and forgetting to do so, so that you're ready to go with 200 plus, hopefully 300 plus miles each morning when you get in the car to go. Mm. And that is going to be the key to your surviving the frustration of not having enough charge in your car. And if you do, there have been some people who have forgotten to charge their car overnight, and they've gone off to, let's say, Hartford, Connecticut, without thinking that they didn't charge the car enough to get there and back. And on the way back, and this one particular example I remember vividly is the person had range anxiety in Norfolk and called another family member for possible help assistance, only to find out that this person was able to get to a Tesla charging port. They owned a Tesla in the Stop and Shop Center in Canaan. but they didn't know that they could do it or not based on what they were looking at in their range finder or range meter that tells them exactly how many miles they go before they have to worry about whether they have any juice to get home or not.
Right, and I'm just talking about that's the situation. But you know that as you. Medical is a nice one. You go to the hospital or whatever, and then they say, well, you got to go see so-and-so or do something.
Well, here's the situation with that. You're right. But that's why you have to start out each day.
Yeah.
You're not going to put, in your scenario, you're probably not driving 200 miles. Okay?
If you're driving,
it'd be very hard to drive 200 miles in a day, in an 8-hour or 9-hour day, driving around here, doing those kinds of
things. No. My new scenario is you got to go to Yale, New Haven.
Well, that's...
To the hospital. That's my new scenario.
Okay.
And you got to be there first thing in the morning, and remember to charge your car.
It's going to take a rethink and all that, and while that is occurring in these coming years, there are going to be a lot of people that refuse to buy electric cars, okay? So we're still going to have fossil fuel cars, even though car makers are talking about phasing out all fossil fuel cars by 2035, 2040. That's probably a moving target. It'll change as the practical knowledge base of electric car ownership becomes a more necessity of reality for some people, not to mention the price of electric cars, which are still ranging between, mid-30s is the lowest before federal subsidies, but mostly in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and up. And the interesting, Subaru and Toyota are coming out with a twin electric car this summer, and they're probably building them now. And the headline in this article is that the Subaru is going to cost less because over the Toyota Twin, because Toyota Twin they've lost their federal subsidies, and the Subarus haven't come anywhere near yet, selling 250,000 cars or something. And so there's still a $7,500 federal subsidy that a buyer of the Subaru electric car, which is a twin to the Toyota electric car, will have on it, and the Toyota won't. So that's a technical situation which comes back to the problem of are they going to... And there's a big war raging in behind the scenes about whether the federal subsidies should be extended to all makers without numerical limits or not. I am not for it. Because that should not be the way you incentivize somebody to buy an electric car. People should buy electric cars for the environmental benefits that they will have towards the air pollution situation and other things that I think make electric car ownership ultimately an advantage over fossil fuel cars, despite all the other problems, logistical and convenience and all that many people are going to face during their ownership.
All right, you're moving into the five. You're moving into the 5-minute mark.
Okay.
Traditionally,
building for the, if there are any contractors that listen to this show locally here, the Ford Electric Lightning pickup is well into production. Started, I think, May 6th, or maybe early April. Anyways, the article I've read this morning in one of my magazines is that 1 in 5 electric pickups coming off the assembly line right now are being built in the contractor pro level trim for contractors and commercial users specifically. The benefit of this contractor pro version of the electric pickup truck is going to be priced down near the base level, which is $40,000 more or less for it. And pickup trucks, as anybody who's bought a pickup truck knows, when you go in to look at pickup trucks in dealers' lots, many of the pickup trucks, fossil fuel-powered right now, are well into the $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 sticker price because of the elaborate trim levels that they come to the dealers' lots in. So contractors do not need the fancy interiors and all that. They may like them, but they do not need them. And that level of pickup truck is apparently going to be priced at around the $40,000 a level if they're not artificially inflated by the dealers with what we call ADMs, additional dealer markups. But 1 in 5 coming off the pickup trucks, they've built apparently 2,200 in the last couple of weeks. That means at least 600 or 500 of them are contractor-based pickup trucks, trim levels. And hopefully a Ford dealer near us will have one on their lot pretty soon, if it's not already pre-sold, so that people can go and take a look at them to see whether that's what they want to buy in the next pickup truck level. There's a lot going on behind the scenes, which the public will never see. Dealers' lots are still relatively empty. I was at a Mazda dealer down in Milford, Connecticut this week. Every new, brand new Mazda vehicle, that's the one that has the dealer sticker in the window and has come off the truck, had a sold sign in front of it. There was virtually no new, brand new Mazdas available, but there were plenty of off-lease used CX-5s, a couple of CX-7s, a couple of CX-3s that were theoretically available. I actually got a printed-out list of used cars at this particular dealership, and I think there were 45 used cars, not all Mazdas. They had Jeeps and they had other things available. But the showroom was full on a Saturday afternoon when I arrived at this dealership. There were six sales staff. Everybody had a potential buyer there buying something that they could get their hands on or ordering a Mazda vehicle. I'm sure this was the case in some Ford dealerships, Chevy dealerships around. People, the pent-up demand to buy a car, whether it's new or pre-owned used, is very evident in high gear as we move into the spring, through the spring of 2022, which is good for the dealerships, and they are making quite a bit of money. Despite the fact that they are constrained with new inventory, they are managing to sell cars at prices without a whole lot of discounting, because all they can say is if you don't buy it at the price we'll sell it to you at, somebody else will. So you either got to take it the way we want to sell it to you, or else you don't get it the way you want to. And gone are the days where you could get $2,500 or $3,000 off some sticker prices and some new cars, when the dealers had lots brimming with new vehicles and they were looking to turn vehicles any way they could. And this is going to be around, with us for quite some time, even though the chip supply situation is supposed to be improving. But there's apparently other component shortages. So anybody who wants to buy a car, I suggest looking at pre-owned in the make and model you want, if you can find it at your dealer and they have them.
And hopefully those
3-year leases end every day of the year, probably, because they sell most of the cars that are on the lots are 3-year leases, or they've got between 22 to 37,000 miles on them, and they're virtually brand new when their dealers have finished reconditioning them, and they come with good warranties, These cars, as Jay and I have said to listeners, are more reliable than they've ever been from the standpoint of racking up mileage and still being in good condition. And racking up mileage means going into 100,000 miles and beyond. That's how well built they are in most cases.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.